Hey guys, welcome to Corner Geeks, episode 5, part 2, where Fidaus and I continue to talk about Apple's WWDC 2011. In this part, we'll talk about iOS 5. In our previous section, we talked about Lion, and in the next, we will talk about iCloud. So I hope you guys enjoy our discussion on iOS 5. So here we go. iOS 5. Lots of people have been waiting for this. Well, notifications, well, I guess one of the big ones. There was a lot of finally moments where they said, finally we get this, finally we get that. They do have a few other tweaks here and there. What was your take on it?
I think again, same with the Lion. There's lots of like really shiny new things like Notification Center that's really obvious for the users. But I think, and Wi-Fi sync, but I think it's also a lot of new upgrades for the APIs. I think there's lots of changes in the background, maybe, I would imagine. Things like Delta update. Well, that's an assumption. But yeah, there's lots of really obvious stuff that now makes it easier for people to use it without a PC. It's like no longer need to backup. There's going to be a backup. You can activate it without using a PC. You can do wireless sync, so you don't have to connect to your PC anymore. And there's a lot of integration with the cloud, iCloud that we mentioned.
Yeah, I guess...
I don't know.
The main features would be like notification sensor. You finally have proper notifications on iOS. No longer pop-ups. You have PC-less activation. You don't have to connect any iOS device to a computer to actually start using it. Wireless sync, so you don't have to use an actual cable to connect to your computer to sync it up. I think those are the main points, won't you think? Maybe iMessage as well, which is something that they have.
I think iMessage is big, especially for those iPod Touch and iPad, and maybe somewhere along the future. But anyway, wireless sync. Also, I think, although backup is something iCloud, I think we'll just mention it. Yeah. Using iCloud, you can backup all your apps now. It's free, so you backup all your messages. Well, iMessages. You backup all your apps, you backup all your settings. And then, the nice thing about this, if you do a restore, or if you buy a new phone or whatever, that PC-less activation, you can also do a wireless restore.
Yeah, so I think they've done a wireless device, in a sense, a cloud-linked device well. They've done it better than what Google has done on Android in terms of backing up settings. Even before this, where they used iTunes, right? All the settings were stored in iTunes. So when you restore, you get all your settings back. The same cannot be said for Android devices because there are some things that Google only saves like your mail, your contacts. They don't save everything, like your device settings, game settings, things like that. So if you format a device, you lose all that, and which is something pretty frustrating, I guess, can be frustrating for users.
I think the nice thing also is that a lot of these things should be invisible to the users. They just find that, there may be like some things they need to learn, but they'll find that it just makes it easier to use, even more than before. They don't have to use a computer to update, etc. Activation. I think it's like overall. Although I think I wasn't really that after looking through to it, and then after using it a little bit, I wasn't that excited anymore. But I think for the general consumer, even though they don't realize it, they're like being distracted by things like iTunes and stuff. I think a lot of it is going to be big, but anyway.
Yeah, I guess let's talk about iMessage, which is basically messaging among iOS devices. I guess it's something that could be used to replace SMS or text messaging, but I believe that has been already replaced, kind of, already with applications like WhatsApp, especially here in Asia.
I think a lot of people do use WhatsApp. The time when you don't use WhatsApp is either A, it's down, but, you know, by LB, when you, like, messaging to, for example, your parents or your grandparents who doesn't have the WhatsApp or feature phone. Oh, not feature phone, smartphone. So they only have like no the usual phones. So what you do is like you exit WhatsApp, open the messaging app, and then you send that, and then you go back to. Sometimes you forget that once I forgot that I was on SMS and not WhatsApp. Yeah, I think iMessage is essentially that. Like for most people, or for most Bruneians anyway, what they would know is WhatsApp. For maybe like the RIM Messenger. That's the BBMS, is it?
BlackBerry. BBM.
Yeah, BBM. So now they essentially replaced the messages in iPhone or iOS. And then iPod and iPad also gets that. So they seamlessly, I think, I'm not sure specifically, but they seamlessly will say that if the person doesn't have, kind of like FaceTime, I guess, if the person doesn't have an iMessage capable device, they will send an SMS. If not, they'll just send a nice message and should be invisible to the users, which would be nice.
Okay. So basically, iMessage sends it via data, right? Basically,
yep.
At the end of the day. Yep. And what's great about it is that it's available for iPod and iPads that do not have 3G.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's one limiting fact about WhatsApp. It was free the other day. I tried to download it on my iPad Touch. It's not supported because I think the way WhatsApp works is it sends an SMS as verification. And that and cannot maybe be done on non-cellular devices.
Yeah, so, and maybe it's also for paying WhatsApp. I think they need to pay $2 per year. I think it could be using that SMS. I'm not sure though.
Oh, okay. Because I think initially it's free, right? It was free for iOS for that 1 or 2 days. I think about a week back. For Android, it is free. But it sends a SMS, a text as verification to activate your phone. The great thing about iMessage is that I guess it bypasses all that. And it just uses your, was it Apple ID?
I'm assuming it's going to be Apple ID or email, just like FaceTime.
Just like FaceTime.
Yeah.
I think the greatest alternative, like we mentioned, is WhatsApp. But I think one thing that, there's another alternative called, I think, KakaoTalk. It's similar to WhatsApp, but it just uses a regular username and password to log in. So what that enables it to do is enables that to be completely cross-platform, something that iMessage is not, because it only works on iOS devices.
Yep, that's
I guess it's another move for Apple trying to lock you into the iOS and the Apple ecosystem. But I guess the thing is, if they do it right and the experience is good, just like FaceTime, people would flock there. But my only issue is that I don't know. To me, I like interoperability. You shouldn't have to force people to use iOS devices. So more open messaging client is something I would look forward to. Something like KakaoTalk. It's good because it just uses username and password. Currently, it's only on mobile, on Android and iOS. But imagine if they implement a desktop app.
Yeah. Although the nice thing about WhatsApp and like KakaoTalk is that for most cases, users, especially like regular users, even me sometimes when I'm using, we don't really want to register username, user password, and then we log in and then see who's online, etc. The nice thing about WhatsApp is that it uses your mobile phone number as the identifier for that person.
I think that's what made it big as well, is that it was so seamless in actually downloading WhatsApp and getting connected with your friends, because it searches your contact list and it checks back on the WhatsApp servers to see whether that number has been registered. If so, you can directly talk to that person because you both have WhatsApp already.
Yeah. At first, I wasn't really convinced, WhatsApp, WhatsApp is just like I am. But in actually using it, it does actually replaces, for me anyway, replaces SMS. Most of my friends are on WhatsApp now. That's why my friend bought an Android phone, because he wanted to use WhatsApp. It's also on the RIM, BlackBerry, but mostly it's an Android. But yeah, it's WhatsApp is nice. WhatsApp is nice. Not sure if iMessenger will catch on. Obviously, it will. But I may be still use. Actually, yeah, of course, I'm going to use it. It's just SMS or iMessenger. Yeah.
The only problem I find is that okay, just say iMessage catches on. So that means if you're going to message your friends, you're going to have to use iMessage. But what if they don't have an iOS device? Then you're going to switch over to something else. Whether it be WhatsApp or some other application that comes in the future.
You could just SMS them. Should be built into that. That's what I just realized. Although, yeah, I would probably still be running WhatsApp because one of my friends is on Android. One.
Hey, me as well?
Okay, two. You know what? WhatsApp, Windows Mobile Phone. Where is Windows Mobile Phone user? I have exactly zero people running Windows Mobile Phone. And is there WhatsApp? I don't think there's a WhatsApp.
I don't know. I don't think so.
And people don't care.
Yeah, the other competitors in terms of iMessage for Google, for Android, they only have GTalk, which is basically, it's IM. Mm. A typical IM client. Microsoft, they don't really have anything. They have Windows Live Messenger. They do have Skype, though, which they recently acquired.
Yep.
And I feel that could be a dark horse, and it could actually, if they implement things right, that could be a better solution. Mm. Because Skype in itself is already cross-platform, right? Mm-hmm. It's on Android, it's on iOS, it's on, I believe it would be on Windows Phone 7, right? It's on even Symbian, it's on the desktop. So it's available on all platforms. And since Skype is closed source, right, they have the ability to streamline their clients to be able to make sure that it works properly. Because I think the problem with IM, if you are using a different client, some things might not work properly. It doesn't do proper file transfers. That's why WhatsApp is good, is that you can transfer photos, you can transfer videos, right?
Mm,
because it's a consistent client. It's a consistent... It's developed by one person or one company, and they make sure that application works. If you're talking about an open application or an open API like Google Talk, you have different clients. Some support voice, some don't. Some support file transfers, some don't.
It's worse with the Google Talk because it's based on Jabber. So they're essentially saying Jabber clients, which also supports Google.
Yes, but that's the thing about if you control everything, you're able to control the user experience. That's what Apple, I guess, is known for as well, right? They control a lot of things. And because of that, they control the hardware, they control the software. And because of that, they can add the integration and they can add better user experience than having something that's just open.
And now with iMessages, they may even like slightly, there's been talked about that, slightly take control from the carriers, the messaging aspect. SMS used to be a carrier thing.
Yeah.
So now they're also taking over. And who knows, maybe they also take audio. For example, like the Skype, Microsoft Skype that you mentioned, mm-hmm. hopefully they can build it into their, because the nice thing about Google and Microsoft, they also have their own phones, Android phones, Microsoft Phone 7 phones. So I'm not sure, do they build in Google GTalk into Google Android phones?
GTalk is, as long as it's a Google certified phone, it will come with GTalk. Yeah. So there's the actual GTalk application. Yeah. But there comes actually another issue with Android itself, is that like applications like Mail, YouTube, GTalk, Maps, right? And Market, they are only available to applications that are certified for Google, by Google. So if you talk about like cheap China phones or cheap China tablets, right? They're not certified, so they won't have those applications.
Compared to expensive China phones.
Well, yeah. The expensive ones might actually just do a hack and install the Market APK for you.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that's also, yeah. I think it's good to mention also, unlike Google and Microsoft, Apple is also the one who creates their own hardware, like you mentioned. So in other words, they can build in their own iMessage into messages. They can just replace message. Whereas in Android and maybe Microsoft, it may be a little bit more difficult to integrate their own, like for example, with Microsoft Windows Live Messenger. A lot of people actually use Windows Live Messenger, integrated into the messenger message capabilities. That's the nice thing about N900. Bless that phone. That's the nice thing about N900 is that it's actually the messaging part of it. In other words, they have the contacts list. Their SMS is also built in, and I think GTalk, IM, Skype is also built into the contacts. So it's actually, or supposed to be, if it works anyway, it's supposed to be that it's almost the same as SMS. Everything is collected there, email, per contact. I think that would be an ideal form. And now Apple just sort of is doing it. In fact, they're doing the Twitter integration thing now. Maybe in the future, they can have like Twitter updates or Twitter mentions or replies into the SMS. I don't know. That's just speculation. But, you know, it's sort of possible because the cooperation is there.
Yeah, I guess so. That was a quite a long digression on iMessage itself and talk about IMs, things like that. But anyway, back to topic on iOS 5. What else do they have? They have like little things like reading lists in Safari, which is similar to Instapaper or Read It Later, which is basically you can, in a sense, bookmark a page and it goes into your reading list, which you can use to read later. They have Reader View. Yeah, Reader View, I feel, is pretty interesting because it basically removes all the cruft of web pages and shows you just the content. So imagine going to brewdirect.com and not seeing all the crap that they have, all the clutter and stuff that they have, you know, oh, well, all the ads.
That's good. What if you go to Brewdirect and don't see anything?
That could be a possibility.
Yeah, so this fixes that. You remember the white thing, the CSS thing that's messed up with BrewDirect?
Yeah.
I still have that problem though. I need to use your bookmarklet thing. Or
yes, the CSS hack. Yeah, another thing they had, actually, one last thing about the reader, I think reader view, right? So just say an article has multiple pages. So it says, oh, click next to see more, right? What Reader View can do is it can combine all that into one seamless page, which is nice. Because so just say you have a multi-page article that you're going to read. Just click Reader View, and it loads everything in one seamless web page that has no ads on the side, things like that, just for reading.
And also, as an addition, if you're reading on, like, say, an iPhone, the screen may be not the CSS or the styles may not be suitable for your iPhone. So now with the Reader View, they can do... Essentially, there's also like a readability. I think there's a site for that called readability. But
that does the exact same thing, right? But it's a more cross-platform, open kind of thing. Whereas this reading list and Reader View is only for Safari. And I presume it will be synced to all devices, right? So if you make a change, if you save a document to the reading list on your iPhone, it's automatically saved on the iPad as well if you want to read it there. And possibly even on your desktop if you have Safari, if you use Safari.
Yeah, I think it's good. At least because now I use mostly Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R. Which is a Google Talk client for the iPhone, which does the same thing, but uses Google Talk client, Google Reader client. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I read all of my. I even rarely open Safari because it also has that capability, readability. It uses it in nice fonts, in nice typography.
But that in itself is RSS feeds, right? It's not like you go to a website and all of a sudden you want to read this, right? That for your implementation or the way your use case is basically just RSS feeds that you subscribe to.
Essentially, yeah. But yeah, it has that built in, so it's very nice.
Yeah, personally, I use Read It Later. So basically, the great thing about that is everything is stored in the cloud, and it's accessible on the desktop. It's accessible on my phone through the Read It Later client.
Yep.
So it's available on my iPod Touch as well. So I guess at the end of the day, it comes down to whether you want to support this interoperability on different platforms, or would you just prefer the Apple experience, which is something I think people should be wary of, should be made known of as well, at least.
Join, trust Steve Jobs, he knows everything. But yeah, well, at least in Reader View, it doesn't really matter if it's interoperable, because it's just useful, like if you're using Safari on the iPhone, and then you just can't read it, and then you just switch on Reader View. That's just an advantage, added advantage. Yeah. Whether you want to use reading this or not, supposedly some say it's just like a glorified bookmarks with syncing maybe, but you know, there's some, you know, good things or bad things about it. But yeah, I think it's like you said, it's either you want to use it or not. But for regular users, it's there, they can use it. I think it's an advantage as a whole. Maybe not for the companies, but they have better features anyway. But that's a different story.
Yeah. I think other things they added were reminders, which is kind of nice. I don't know. To me, it's like, oh, okay, it's just reminders.
Yeah. Although it uses GPS, which is interesting. A lot of people, there was the weird applause for that. Woo!
Yeah, I found that kind of weird. It's like, yeah, okay.
For example, I could just be one to be reminded if I go to my sister's house, it can be like, I don't know, maybe this time, next time, or next year, for example, maybe like I can put a reminder. If I go to this GPS, please remind me to kirim salam, this person kirim salam. So we just put it.
Yeah.
And then we can forget about it. And then we just go to that place, and then suddenly, bzz, bzz, what is this? What? Kirim salam? Oh, yeah. I think that's kind of neat anyway. It wowed the developers anyway.
I think the only issue I have with it is that it constantly requires a data connection.
Does it?
GPS itself, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't, but is GPS itself that accurate without data connection?
It doesn't require data. It's a separate radio. I suppose you can leave it on all the time. It could be using Wi-Fi sometimes, so if you leave it on.
It could be using the Wi-Fi hotspots that Apple gathered from its...
It's a big usage. Database, yeah. Well, it's already there, essentially. I think that because a lot of people have location services on all the time anyway, and they don't really know. They should actually, but that's a different story.
Yeah. Speaking of that, right, I find it weird that iMovie needs location services on and enabled.
That's kind of like the camera. Because I think it geolocates the in the photos. So actually, you need to be really careful. Like a lot of people don't actually realize the photos, there's geolocation on them, and they like want to be secure. Turn off location services.
Yeah, I think it's kind of nice reminders. It's good. Users will like it if it works well. But that's good.
I think they just throw in there just to wow the consumers. Because I don't think consumers are really going to be wowed by everyday backup. Wow, although it's like, that's actually the bigger thing for them.
Yeah, I would think so. They have things like Newsstand, which is a consolidation of subscriptions, I guess, like your bookstores or anything that you subscribe to.
Yeah, it's your just weekly, like
monthly magazines, things like that.
I think it's just like a special version of apps. So there's going to be a special place in App Store. There's also going to be a special folder that will store all of those apps. Maybe depends. I don't know if it's big or not, but I think it'll be big in the way that there's a discussion about, there's a separate discussion not really related to us about the print media, the old media, and subscriptions and them going to die, and iPad or iPhone being their savior or death.
This is basically the way that old media should transition up into the current media state, right? Monthly subscriptions, things like that. Yeah. Other things like Twitter integration, I guess it's kind of nice. I think the main thing that caught my eye was that they said that you just need to key in your Twitter credentials once. You install any app and it will ask to automatically use those credentials so the user doesn't have to retype in their username and password, which is good for consumers if they want to try out different Twitter applications.
It's also going to be like built into the... So maybe they don't... Maybe like any apps can just like say, can I send this to Twitter? And not with, not even having to code things specifically for Twitter. So now... say every app like can do well, they're doing it now, but it can be easier, I suppose. Like the photos can also be
because like basically the iOS's implementation of sharing, basically, right? Currently you, I think you have like things like open in Safari or email, things like that. Now they're going to have sent to Twitter, right? And I think this sharing kind of thing is not done well in iOS. In Android, it's done pretty well because, just say for instance, this, you want to share a picture on Twitter straight away. You, for iOS world, you need to wait for Apple to actually implement it. In Android, the sharing capability is built in. As long as in any application supports the sharing, you can share it automatically.
I think it's just like it's the, because Apple has this thing about opening up their APIs. They're really careful about APIs, whereas Google or Android is supposed to be open source. So you know, technically, the APIs are there, and they can read all the, even the one that's not given to the developers. So
I guess it's something nice to have. I feel Android is done sharing better, but. We'll see what the consumer thinks about that.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, they caught up, I think, with the Twitter thing, maybe.
Not really, because like for me, if I'm reading a web page, I can straight away send it to, I can either send it to Twitter, I can send it to email, I can send it to read it later, or Instapaper, without any need for Google to actually implement anything, as long as the app that I've installed supports it. Which I guess can be overcome using bookmarklets if you're talking about web pages, but if you're talking about things like just say images, right? You take a photo, you just say you want to edit it in an application. What you could do in Android is you click the share button, send it to your image editor, and it will open up straight away.
I think it's just the APIs in Apple. Although I would imagine it's should be able to do it now because there's already the passing of data. I'm assuming it's just because apps are not implementing it. Because, for example, the photos in any website, I can right-click it and send it to read Readle Docs, for example, or Goodreader. Similarly, I can also send it to... there's also another way to, for example, read it later on. You can use a hack, URI hack, also that, for example, HTTP. You just add a G in the front, and it'll send it to Goodreader. But that's really a bad hack. Yeah, you're right. There should be a way for the apps to hook into the user interface easily.
To basically a sharing mechanism. Because I believe they actually mentioned this in one of the previous keynotes, maybe possibly even last year, they mentioned that, oh, you can do more sending to sharing. I think
because it's already there because I've been using it.
But it's not it's not widespread, think, or not.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's just apps are not using it, maybe. Or maybe they're using it another way. A lot of the application, they just use like Dropbox or stuff like that to circumvent it. Or maybe it's going to be easier for them. I remember... We can do this using the, well, maybe sharing is not the right word, like pipe information from one app to another. I'll look into it. I have a feeling it's already there, but it's just not being used quite well.
I remember there was this one time I had a friend, he took a photo, right? I guess using the camera app, and he wanted to share it on WhatsApp. And he was like, oh, how am I can't send this to WhatsApp? Oh, WhatsApp. I need to open the WhatsApp application before you actually send it, because you need to pick the image in WhatsApp itself. As opposed for things like Android, you can take the picture, click the share, send it to WhatsApp, and message somebody straight away. So I think Apple could work on that to make it even better for their users on their side.
It's true. Yep.
Moving right along, anything else to mention?
Yes, wireless sync. See, an Apple or an iPhone, you're on the Wi-Fi, then you can now sync it. Sync from your computer without cable. Sync it, you know, you can just charge it. Sync it, wireless sync. It's just, as the name says, syncing without wires.
Yeah, I guess that's something good, because actually even for myself, on my phone, even though it's not an iPhone, it's an Android device, I don't usually connect it to my computer. If anything, I connect it to the... I have a charging station next to my bed. I use that to charge, but I don't usually connect it to my computer. So I guess people would have the same kind of thing, and wireless sync just makes it easier to get all your things set up as a book and without having to find the cable to connect to your computer straight away.
Yep. And you can use it while syncing. That's nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, just a random, that's nice. Let's see. Did we say Delta over the air?
I don't think we mentioned that yet.
Yeah.
So anyway, basically, they mentioned that since they're trying to cut the cord to be a PC-free device, right? They're enabling over-the-air updates.
Yep.
And because they want to keep the data down, they implement Delta updates as well. So you don't have to just say right now or previously when you want to upgrade the iOS system, it's like, what, 600 meg downloads? 600.
Now it's up to 700 megs.
Wow. So update. Yeah, so in the future, it may not be so big anymore. Maybe 50 megs or even lower even. So it's good for consumers. You don't have to worry about hurting your data caps.
And again, with the security thing, I'm pretty sure there's going to be more like security hacks with the iPhone. So now they can just do like every day, there could be like 100 kilobytes of security patches, which would be nice. It's kind of like what Windows did before, surprisingly enough. Windows is good with the updates. I don't know why.
Yeah, perhaps they're foreseeing that they're getting, they will be on the receiving side of more hacks in terms of iOS, especially since iOS devices, or especially iPhones, are very, in a sense, very coveted, because they contain a lot of personal information. They have internet connectivity either through 3G or through wireless, so in a sense they are mobile roaming computers, and in terms of hackers, that is very something that they would want to target. You have personal information, so you can use that for identity theft. You have always connected, could be always connected computer as well, so you can use that to do DDoSes, things like that.
Yeah, there's a GPS, there's a camera. Everything is like contacts. Sometimes some people, I would imagine, their whole lives could be stored in the iPhone. Mine is almost kind of like that. So they have like the passwords to Facebook. They have the passwords to Twitter, for example, in the what do you call it, keychain, I suppose, could be. Mm-hmm.
True.
So it could be a lot. It could be like before, the thing with the... people were really upset with the geolocation data.
Yeah.
Usually it's okay because it's actually just inside the device. So you have to have physical access. But in the future, there's an exploit. People can just read through the data inside your phone. So it could be a big thing. So I think data updates, although it's convenient, it's really convenient for us users, but I think it's also like maybe for the security standpoint, they don't want to download 700 megabytes every day.
Yeah, true. Other notable changes, I guess the nice thing would be the camera shutter button.
Yeah, and camera update in general.
Yeah, the camera update in general. First and foremost is, they have a camera button on the lock screen, right? Or do you have to enable that? Do you have to double press to enable that?
Yeah. If you like, for example, in the lock screen, you double click, there appears the iPod play back button, right?
So besides, it does. I never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that you can play from that, and there's a volume button. But if you do it in iOS 5, there's going to be a small button that says camera in the slide to unlock. So you click that, it immediately goes to the camera. Also, people who are worried about security, they don't show the photos inside. They just don't show anything inside. So you know what? You can just take a picture from there.
So basically, you go straight to the camera without any lock screen as well. If you have a lock screen, it bypasses that already straight away. Yeah. But basically, they implemented this so that people can take photos as quick as possible, so they don't miss the moment that they want to capture.
Yep. So also nice thing is that, like you mentioned, the shutter button. So the volume up or volume increase button is going to be the shutter. So you just press it, and it's good in that it's more stable from taking picture, because you're not trying to click on the screen. It's also maybe it's just better in general. There's other things like you can pinch to zoom.
General little application updates to the camera, so you can do a little editing, things like that. Nice to have.
Yeah, I think so. It's. I think a lot of people find it actually big, because for a lot of people, including me, this is their dedicated camera, not just camera phone, but camera. They did mention, so I think it'll be big, maybe. I don't know. And it's mostly for camera enthusiasts, exposure lock, white balance lock, things like that. But yeah, it's a thing. Also, can create albums on iOS. That'll be finally.
Yeah, I think a lot of little tweaks like that, creating albums on the device itself, is just plays more into them saying they want to cut the cord, so that it's a standalone device by itself now. I think they even mentioned things like, I think, calendars. Something you can create calendars as well now. Previously, you had to be done, I think, either on the computer or something like that.
Post-PC era.
Yeah. Small things like for iPad users, there's tab browsing and a split keyboard.
Yeah.
Split keyboard is basically when you're in landscape mode, you can split. I'm not sure whether in portrait mode as well.
I think it's portrait mode, yeah. I think.
Probably both. Yeah. You can split the keyboard into on the left and right side, so that it's easier to thumb type as opposed to having the keyboard stretched to the whole screen.
I think you imagine like the iPhone keyboard, split it in two, and then just move it to the sides, I think, or something like that. So it's, I think I might use that. That's actually one of the things that I don't like about iPad. It's too hard to do that in time.
More iPad news. AirPlay mirroring?
Yep, AirPlay mirroring. So it's kind of like just mirroring over AirPlay for iPad 2.
So basically, it's like you can share whatever is on the iPad itself to a HD TV or a projector, but it requires an Apple TV, doesn't it?
By default it requires, or how Apple wants it, requires an Apple TV. So let's say your projector or your TV is connected to the Apple TV. So then the theory is that any people, like say in a conference, they can say, okay, let me join that wireless network and then let me show you my thing. So before they can only send it using specific apps, or using, for example, they can only send photos or videos if it's enabled. Or, for example, I don't think you can do Keynote before.
But I think now, is AirPlay mirroring exactly the same as just using the dongle to do display mirroring?
Yeah, I think so. That's the big thing. Because the only way to mirror it before was either jailbreak. Then they had the HDMI thing, so now you can mirror using HDMI. Now they can mirror it using AirPlay. So, and I think it's also big, like for people who are doing screencasts or people doing a podcast like us, they can now just use AirPlay to maybe capture the screen rather than. So that's another big thing. So yeah, they're showing everything versus before.
That's good. The only issue is that it requires an Apple TV, right? That's the only main issue, I would think.
Imagine
you want to do display mirroring or something. Do you want to bring an Apple TV with you, or you just don't want to bring a dongle to convert the connector port to an HDMI output.
The use case with the dongle is that you have access, or you are going to have access to the cable, and it's what they've been doing all along. But what I've been thinking on, like, so for example, if I am planning or designing a new office for like this new department. So what we want is like just this TV, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyone with like a laptop, etc., they can just say, okay, let me connect to this TV and do the wireless, and let me show you my screen. So kind of like AirPlay does. So they don't.
Yeah, it's more makes sense if it's more of a kiosk kind of thing, right? Where the Apple TV and the monitor is already set up in a certain place. It's not really like a projector kind of.
Even a projector. Imagine like say you were in ICC, lots of people, and then you're everywhere. Then you can set up a presentation, say in the middle of the ICC, and then you can log in, show the AirPlay, and then it's shown in the two projectors and the big screen projectors. And then once you're done, you can log off and then pass it along to another one. I think AirPlay is good in that you can allow other people or other devices to just connect and show. It's actually kind of like a wireless projector technology now that
it's true. Basically, well, like the wireless display technology that they have, right, for some HDTVs, things like that.
Yep. I think
this is, I guess, Apple's take on things where... Yep. In terms of hardware, you need more Apple hardware through the Apple TV, but in a sense, it's convenient as well because nobody else needs to bring any extra hardware. They have the iPad, just need to set it up, and they have the mobility of using the iPad while it's already it's displaying on the screen.
I think there's a lot of interest amongst users or like geeks like us with the AirPlay protocol itself. In fact, it's already been reverse engineered. Well, it's trying to be reverse engineered. Oh, it has already been reverse engineered, sorry. So before they do things like the Sonos wireless sound thing, oh. Apple Express is a speaker, right? So yeah. before the video thing, I think in iOS 4 or whatever, you can like just throw your audio from your iPhone or your iTunes into that Apple Express, and it shows the speaker there. So you have essentially a centralized speaker. Some guy reverse engineered, I think, the AirPod Express and got the keys to allow AirPlay to be done. So now you can create AirPlay devices from anything, not just the AirPod Express, not just the Apple TV. For example, I think I have a link right there. We can. There's one already created for Windows Media Player. So there's a plugin for that. I haven't tried it. It needs a Bonjour net folder, but after I've done with work, I can play with it. So you install it on your Windows Media Center, and then hopefully you can it can appear in the AirPlay device as an AirPlay device. There's also one for the Mac server. And finally, this is the one that I'm really looking into. It's a way for laptops and computers or whatever to be able to send as an AirPlay client to send into the receiver.
Nice.
So currently, I think there's an iTunes app and I think there's a Windows Media Player app that is able to send video and audio to AirPlay devices. But currently, there's no way to actually do the mirroring thing because it requires, you know, transcoding, etc. But yeah, I think it's in the step in the right direction. So
yeah,
there's
actually, that's cool. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I think there's a potential there. But a lot of people, I don't think, but it'll be useful in office, at least in office conditions, I think.
Yeah, I think offices and actually even in homes, if as long as people have Apple TVs, because the Apple TV will be connected to a HDTV, right? And
yep.
If just say you have friends over, they want to share something, they can easily just connect through AirPlay as opposed to finding a cable and connecting up and leaving a cable lying around. It makes things cleaner and it makes things simpler. As long as you have an Apple TV, it comes down to the Apple experience, the Apple ecosystem that Apple has developed throughout their, I guess, their career or since they re-emerged in the market.
They reappeared like a phoenix from the blue.
Anything else you want to mention about iOS 5? I believe you mentioned that you've tried it out yourself. You've installed it on your iPhone.
You know what, dude? Let me tell you a story. So, late night. Anyway, yeah. So there were news about the iOS 5 being jailbroken, right? So that immediately, I remembered this whole thing with leaks. In other words, you know, it's just IPSW. You can upgrade into, you can upgrade your iPhone and your devices. Like, oh, you know what? I bet you there's a leak somewhere. So I tried it out. So I downloaded this IPSW for the iPhone 4 for iOS 5. I restored it. It worked. Yes, I said, let me use iOS 5. Then I wanted to activate it. That's where the problem started. So you have to activate how Apple handles jailbreaking or try to reduce jailbreaking is that whenever they activate or whenever they try to upgrade or downgrade, they always contact their servers. So usually they need the computer, iTunes, or your phone is expecting a hash probably from your iPhone ID, UIDD, which is specific. It's like the serial number of your iPhone and also the what do you call that, the iOS firmware version. Mm-hmm. So so they need to sign that. For example, right now, you can't really downgrade to iOS 4.0 because they stop signing that. That's how they stop jailbreakers, or they try to stop jailbreakers. So anyway, I tried to activate iOS 5 using the new PC-less activation, and I can't.
Because really? Why?
You can't. Because apparently, how they activate it, this beta, or all betas apparently, is that they check your UIDD, the iPhone UIDD, the serial number that I mentioned that every device has. Mm-hmm. So this UIDD needs to be registered under a developer account. So I think, I don't know how many devices a developer account has. This is, I think, for testing purposes. You can sideload apps, etc. And you can do, like in this case, upload beta software. So how you would need is, or what you would need is to either have a developer account, you open Xcode, then attach your iOS device, and then you need to say, I want to authorize this device to be a developer account certified device or whatever. So that's what I don't have, you know. And I don't have many friends who will be or who are developing for the account, so I can. But anyway, there's also this. I think yesterday, there was this whole news. There's a lot of people posting news that you can. There's a backdoor. Do it. Don't do it, because if you, it's just a way to access the Springboard or the list of icons or the functionality while just bypassing the activation by using VoiceOver and whatever and opening Safari. And then, but you can just Google it. There's a list of that. But the problem is that you can't double tap. You can't use your phone because you can't activate. You haven't activated it. You can't sync. Gestures don't work, so you can't bring down the notification center. Notifications itself doesn't work because it needs to be activated using. So what you end up is that you can't really test out all the new cool things that iOS 5 offers. And in fact, it cripples your iPhone into something like an iPod Touch and maybe less because, you know. And if you have already upgraded, you may have difficulty in downgrading to iOS 4.33. Unless you, if you're in a jailbreak committee, you have to DFU it. Obviously, you don't need Tiny Umbrella, I don't think, because they're still signing 4.33. But yeah, something to know. Just don't.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. Not yet. Anyway. So
that means you do not get to activate. In a sense, you can't use it or at all, or what?
I can't use it, but you can use it as a phone. I used it about 6 hours playing around. That's when I looked at the options. I did saw the notification drop down. It's activated in VoiceOver. That's one of the hacks. There's also the keyboard shortcuts, which I find quite cool. If you type like O M W, space, usually it autocorrects the spelling, right? But they built into the like macros or typing shortcuts into it. So OMW would say autocomplete, like on my way. Yeah. So maybe I can just like put in maybe DWNK maybe, and then it says like, do you want nasi katok? So maybe for my friends or whatever. So like things that you always say.
I read, I think there's also like custom LED notifications or something, or noted, something like that.
Ooh, I think so, yeah, but I didn't test it out. But yeah, I think there's a list of things that people are finding out that's not being said from testing the iOS beta 5. So there's like, you know, as you can imagine, there's like thousands, millions of people, well, maybe not millions, thousands of people using iOS 5 now. The lucky devils. But yeah, maybe not. Maybe we can find some developer friends and then we can try out iOS 5. At least I think iCloud is not there yet, but iOS 5 at least.
Yeah, I think like the notifications thing is something that I really miss from my old phones, my old Nokia phones that used to have it.
Why didn't they not? Well, okay, they didn't have LED things then. Actually, yeah, I already forgot about it, but that was one of my like greatest pet peeves of the iPhone, not having LED. It's like, oh, someone called me, and then you don't know.
Until you switch on the screen and actually check. Same thing, I think same thing with a lot of Android devices. It's all up to the manufacturer.
Yeah.
LED notifications, I think they're good, they're useful, because at least tells you at a glance without actually having to switch on the screen that something needs your attention. Please take a look at me.
And you like, you know, you can just now you can turn off vibrations like in say a meeting and then you can see the blinking. Also the LED is quite bright. It's kind of like beep, beep, beep. Well anyway, we'll see
how maybe it works. In the next iPhone. I think that's all that we have to mention about iOS 5, isn't it? Before we move on to iCloud.
Yeah.
So maybe. iOS 5, I think, is available in the fall, whenever that is. I think earliest probably September. Mm. Developers get it now. So there's a developer version. If you have a developer account, if you're willing to pay $99 a year to get it.
Yep. And if anyone listening has a developer account, can you
message Fidos to add his UUID in your developer account? I don't mind having one either.
Yeah, there's actually like, if you see, there's even like scams now. Like you say, we will register your UUID into, please give us your, if you see the, it's a big thing now apparently, I don't know. I think some of them are legitimate. If you see the ifans.com forums, there's people. But yeah, anyway.
That concludes our discussion on iOS 5, and please stay tuned for the next discussion on iCloud. Do feel free to contact us on Twitter at mfidaus or at theweet. And we thank you for listening this far. I hope you enjoy the next episode. Thanks, guys.